Okay, so first of all, I think their numbers for connected users were a little low. I think we current estimates that I've been playing with have us at about 2 billion connected users in the world currently, and expecting over the next 5 years that that's going to come closer to 6 billion. So they're not going to fit in the current addressing space in V4 because, well, 4 billion addresses just isn't enough. So first I want to talk about, you know, how is an IPv6 address actually structured? Because believe it or not, we actually mapped out some bit fields to actually have meaning in the address, and we have enough bits to do that. So the first 3 bits are actually still being held back by the IETF, and only 001 has actually been issued and available for unicast addressing. There's a few other assignments outside of 001 that the IETF has made directly. For example, FE80/10 has been reserved for link local. We'll talk more about that later. FF/8 has been reserved for multicast, so there's a very large number of multicast groups possible, et cetera. The next 9 bits are assigned by the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority to create an allocation to an RIR. I think that 7 of these /12s have been issued so far to the various RIRs. I believe Ripe and Aaron both have 2/12s that they're working from, and the other RIRs are all still working on their first one. The next 20 to 36 bits is assigned by the RIR, possibly less. If it's 20 bits, that's a /32 assignment from the RIR. You can get smaller assignments from the RIR if you're operating an ISP that that needs more space. For example, Hurricane Electric, believe it or not, got to more than halfway full on our /32 that we initially got, and we've now started working into an additional /24 that we recently received from Aaron. In the case of an N-site, a typical N-site should receive a /48, and if you're running a multi-home N-site where you're getting your space directly from Aaron as an end user, a 48 is the default assignment per site. Note that is not per installation, not per customer, per site. So for example, if you've got a college campus, each building and possibly each dorm room would be considered a site. The general definition in Aaron policy for a site is any structure or building or any tenant in a multi-tenant structure or building. So trying to kind of put this in somewhat visual perspective, 1/8 of the address space is that 2000/3 there in the middle that's kind of blown up into 4 bars. And when we blow that up, that single /12/3 up into 4 bars, a /12 is one of those tiny little slivers in the middle of one of those 4 bars. If we further blow that sliver up into 8 bars, then a single pixel still represents 204/32 ISP assignments. Blowing one of those up into 4 bars, a single pixel is 409.6/48 end sites. And finally, each pixel in those 4 bars is 409.6/64 subnets. So you've got lots of room to play with when planning your address space in IPv6. So the first thing you have to do is take your IPv4 host packing mentality and throw it away. Okay? Don't even count hosts. Okay? Does anybody want to take a quick guess at how many hosts you can fit on a /64 subnet? All of them. Somebody has attended one of my talks before. Okay? The quick answer is all of them. Okay? The technical mathematical answer is a little more than 18 quintillion and change. In fact, at 18 quintillion, you still have enough extra hosts left over beyond the 18 quintillion in the rounding error that the entire IPv4 internet fits in the rounding error. So when it comes to address planning, don't oversimplify too much. Things need to be exactly as simple as they can be, and no less and no more. A lot of people say ISPs get 32s, end sites get 48s. Not quite completely correct. ISPs get at least a 32. if you are an ISP and trying to put what you need to do into a slash 32 is not working out in your planning, it means you probably shouldn't be trying to pack it into a 32. You should be looking at what you need and then requesting that, whether it's a 28 or a 24 or a 20. Okay. Current Aaron policy allows you to round up to the next nibble boundary so that you have at least 25% of space beyond your big plans. A lot of people are now starting to talk about planning their address space around doing an IPv6 trial and then coming back and replanning it for production. I don't recommend that. There's really nothing you're going to gain by doing so, and you're going to lose a lot of opportunities. Take your best stab at making a real address plan and deploy that as your trial and see how well it works out. You may end up having to come back and replan your production network, or you may not. Most likely you will, in which case it's no worse than if you'd planned your trial and then got it wrong in production. In fact, you're still better off. So the most important takeaway from this entire lecture I'm giving is don't start with a predetermined idea of how much space you can get and try to pack everything into that. Start working from the bottom up of, okay, I've got this many sites, so that means I need this many slash 48s in my largest serving site, and I need this many serving sites, so I need, you know, this many bits to cover serving sites, and work up from there. And, you know, just count bits left from slash 48. Try to align things on nibble boundaries where possible at your aggregation points. This will simplify your life quite a bit. How many of you have messed up trying to do bit math in the middle of the night in crisis mode? Okay. How many of you that don't have your hands up have ever configured a router? You're lying. Anybody that put their hand up in the second group and didn't put their hand up in the first group is probably not really being honest with us. Okay. Okay. Then somebody else is responsible for dealing with the crises. Bottom line, people tend to be bad at doing bit math in their head, including myself, and I've been doing it for years. Okay? If you align things on nibble boundaries, you don't have to do bit math in your head. It's just a hex digit. So start with the number of end sites served by your largest point of presence or your largest aggregation point in your network. Figure out a slash 48 for each of those end sites and round that number of 48s up to a nibble boundary. So let's say, for example, we're running a DSL service and our largest POP supports 3,000 residential customers. Okay. We round that up to a nibble, we get to 4096 or 12 bits, which means we need a slash 36 for each of our serving sites, each of our points of presence. Now we figure out how many POPs we've got and how many POPs we're likely to have in the next 5 years or so. And we round that up to a nibble boundary as well. So we figure out that we're going to have about 140 POPs over the next 5 years. Round that up to 256. That's 8 bits. So from a 36 per POP and 8 bits, we know that we need to request a slash 28. Okay? And this is how you do that calculation. If you didn't follow in the initial, the slide should be on your USB stick so you can come back to this later when you're actually trying to do it in the real world. Say again?
You're also baking capacity planning in?
Essentially, yeah. By rounding up to nibble boundaries and guaranteeing at least a 25% min-free at each aggregation layer, you get a certain amount of capacity planning. Also, because you're sizing the aggregation layers based not on the usage in average at each utilization layer, but on the usage at the largest unit. So for example, if I've got a POP with 3,000 end users and a POP with 1,500 end users and 200 POPs with 5 end users, I'm going to base the size of every POP on the 3,000 end users. So you get a lot of room to play with it. And the policy actually supports you doing this. So bottom line, you probably could have squeezed this into a slash 32 and made it work, but it's really not worth the effort because all you're doing is setting yourself up to run into a brick wall later. Okay, we've already done that once with IPv4, and for those of you that don't remember the internet before NAT, it was a lot less painful. So let's not do that again. So what is an NSite? As I said, it's a single building structure or tenant in a multi-tenant structure. How much do I need for my NSite? This is pretty simple in most cases. If your NSite needs 48,000 or fewer subnets, regardless of the number of hosts, you only count networks in V6, then give it a 48 and move on. If you have a single end site, by this definition, that needs more than 48,000 subnets, I'd be very curious to know what you're doing. But in that case, give that end site a slash 44 or whatever multiple of slash 48s makes the most sense in your particular application. So again, in terms of planning from an end user perspective, take the total number of 48s you need for all of your end sites, round up to a nibble boundary, and go apply to the regional internet registry for your space. That's really all you have to do. And then you give each site a 48 or a group of 48s as needed. The RIR will probably provide you those 48s as a single aggregable prefix. You are not necessarily expected to route them as such. If your sites are, you know, independent and have different upstreams at each location, that's okay. So once you've figured out how much you need, which is really the most complicated part of the whole process, the next step is to contact your friendly neighborhood regional internet registry. There are five of them. Aaron covers the US, Canada, and much of the Caribbean. If you're from Europe, then you'll be talking to the RIPE NCC. If you're from the Asia-Pacific region, Australia, Japan, China, et cetera, you're going to be talking to the APNIC, Asia-Pacific Network Information Center. People from Africa would go to AFRINIC. And finally, if you're in Latin America or the Spanish-speaking parts of the Caribbean, then you would probably be working with LACNIC, the Latin American Caribbean Network Information Center. All of them provide an email or web-based template system for requesting addresses. It's pretty straightforward. All of them have friendly, helpful staff available to talk you through the process and work with you on getting the space you need. It's really not the onerous process that a lot of people have made it out to be. Not all of the RIRs support the particular methodology that I've described here. They don't all support rounding up to nibble boundaries, for example. So your mileage may vary, but you can still make the concepts work in most cases. You just may have to go back to doing bitmap. The good news is having things on nibble boundaries is convenient, but not vital. It makes it easier for IP6.ARPA delegations. It makes a lot of your human factors concerns go away. It makes routing table management a lot simpler. It makes your prefix lists a lot easier to understand, etc. But the techniques that follow about carving this up will work either way. So the carving it up examples I'm about to give are for ISPs because the NSite carving it up process is you give the NSite a 48 and then you assign 64s to each subnet by whatever method makes the most sense to you. Okay? So there's really nothing to teach you there because it's really straightforward. For the most part, you've actually already been through the carving it up process because as you worked your way up in planning what you needed to request, carving it up is just going through that same exact process in reverse. So we start with our slash 28 that we got from our request in our example earlier. And now we know that we need to divide that up into POPs, right? And we had a plan for some number of POPs at 8 bits. So we divide it into 256 units of 8 bits, and that gives us 256 slash 36s, right? So this is not a new form of lossy compression, by the way. Let's give address segments to our points of presence. First, I like to take the first slash 48 out of the whole allocation and assign it to the ISP's infrastructure. Okay, that's going to be the networks for your web servers, your DNS servers. If you're doing DHCP, your DHCP servers will probably live on a subnet somewhere in there. Your router loopbacks will live somewhere in there. Your desktop help center devices and your internal IT and everything else is all going to live mostly within that slash 48 in most cases. Okay, so we reserve that. Each POP gets a slash 36, so that means we have two hex digits that designate each POP. The last digit of the first, or the second, actually, quartet, and the first digit of the third quartet. So now we need to make a choice in how we're going to divide this up. And there are two basic fundamental strategies that you can choose from. And most of the subtle little things people will tell me are different from these two strategies are variations on one of these two themes. Okay? The first theme is sequential allocation. It's what we're all pretty familiar with from V4, right? You allocate one, and then you allocate two, and then three, and then four. It's simple. It's easy to follow. We all learned how to count in kindergarten, hopefully, or maybe even before. And our POP numbers end up roughly tracking the deployment order of the POP, and so we have a tendency to be able to remember things. The disadvantage to this approach is that when the first POP or the second POP grows more than you expected it to, it's not like you can just give POP number two the addresses that start with three and move it one bit to the left. No, you end up either assigning an entire second prefix to the POP or you end up renumbering the POP into a larger prefix somewhere else in your address space. So the other alternative is to do what we call allocation by bisection. The advantages are that it greatly simplifies growth, and it gives you the highest probability of being able to maintain aggregation over the long term. The disadvantage, math is hard. Let's go shopping. So what does it mean to do allocation by bisection? It's a lot like cutting up a pie, right? When you want two pieces, you cut it in half. If you need four pieces, you cut it in half again. If you need eight pieces, you cut each of those four pieces in half. Okay. Similar process for IPv6. Start with our 2001 DB80:28 prefix. And for those of you that are paying attention and understand more about IPv6 than most, you'll recognize this is not exactly the documentation prefix. The documentation prefix is 0DB8. However, I needed a 28, not a 32, so I took a little poetic license. So we've already allocated 2001 DB80:00:00/48 to our infrastructure. That means our available space ranges from 2001 DB80:00:00/1 to 2001 DB8F:FFFF and a lot more Fs. Okay. Cutting that in half puts us at 2001 DB88:00:00/36 for our first POP. Does everybody follow how that happened? Basically, half of 16 is 8, and F sort of represents 15, which is, nearly 16. That puts our largest chunk now from DB88:1000 to DB8F: and a lot more Fs. Okay. If we cut that in half, we put our next POP at DB8C. Okay. And if we lather, rinse, repeat that process a whole bunch of times, we end up with a table that looks roughly like this. Now, this is a four-column table, but it's really a two-column table. It's just that the right-hand two columns belong below the first columns. Okay. But the convenient part of that is it means that our POP1 at the top of the second column, or third column, is exactly halfway down the list from our infrastructure at the top of the first column, right? So each time you go straight across, you're looking at halfway down the address space from where you were on the left. And you'll notice that the top two are, at the beginning and at halfway point. The next two, POPs 2 and 3, are in the middle of the table at the left and right sides. Okay. 4 and 5, you can see, are about a quarter of the way down the table, and 6 and 7 are 3/4 of the way down the table. So we keep packing these things in the middle of the largest chunk of available space and making the space between successively smaller, cutting it in half each time. But that leaves us the largest possible amount of contiguous space next to each allocation remaining. How many people think that there are no spaces in between these allocations on this screen? Okay. How many people think that I can put 2 more /36s between each one? How many people think it's only one? How about 4? 5? Let's go shopping. Okay. The minimum gap here on any of these is 7 additional /36s, okay? So any one of these allocations can grow to 8 times its original size before I run into having to give it another prefix. That's the minimum. Most of them can grow to 16 times their original size minimum, okay? So you get a lot of room by doing it this way that allows you to grow simply by changing the number of bits in the prefix without renumbering anything. How many people think that's more convenient than renumbering an entire point of presence and all the customers? Yeah, okay, you're paying attention at least. So I've pretty well run through what's on this slide, but it's there to kind of remind me if I skipped anything. Again, nSight does not mean a single customer. It means a single customer location. It is very important to understand that. Also important, yes, I really do recommend that you give a residential household a /48 if you are a residential ISP. Okay. There are going to be a lot more networks in residential households in the future than there are today. And there is going to be a need to be able to segregate things. Isolating multicast domains, reducing traffic, enforcing security boundaries, all of these things are going to get much easier to do at the residential level with transparent addressing. And products that are going to come out in the next 5 to 7 years are going to depend on having more than a /64 in each residence. And there's no reason not to give them a /48. There is plenty of address space to do that, okay? We can literally give every person on the planet their own individual /48 for every device they own and still consume roughly 10% of the total IPv6 address space. There's plenty of room. And with that, I am done. Any questions, comments, rotten fruit?
Yes, actually, I have a question.
Can you use a mic, please? Yeah, when you're asking questions, please use a mic. Please tell us who you are and then your question.
Alex Sheshka, Montreal, from Telecommunications. I'm just curious about deployment in terms of geolocation. If you have so much /36, 48, how current GeoDB databases do check of that? You do populate all the information on the Aryan side, Tribe side, for each single customer, it looks like a lot of work, if I'm clear.
Well, I mean, geolocation is only going to be as accurate as what people feed into it. Frankly, geolocation is not a big concern of mine. It doesn't work, it never has, and people that depend on it tend to cause more problems than they solve.
Well, perhaps not. Yeah.
The way to do geolocation is in the application. And if the device has a GPS or ability to locate itself, then it should feed that in as data at the application layer. It shouldn't be baked into the address. Because geography is not topology. And it never has been, and it's not likely to become so. Yes?
My name is Greg Rhodes. I work for part of Norfolk Southern Railroad. Just a question on router-to-router links. Do you still advocate a /64? And what do you do when your ISP insists on really bizarre you know, /126s or things like that for those.
Okay, so the valid choices for router-to-router links are 64, 127, okay? Anything else is just dumb.
Well, Comcast insists for their Metro Ethernet using a 126 if you have more than two routers at the end of their link, so.
Right, and that's dumb. I'm not going to say Comcast isn't doing dumb things.
Yeah.
If you've got more than two routers at the end of a link, it's not a point-to-point link, it's not a router-to-router link, it's a multi-point link, and at that point it should be a 64. Lots of people will do bad things, and there's not really anything I can tell you about how to make your ISP not do bad things other than vote with your feet and go find an ISP that does things right. We will gladly assign anybody a 64 that wants one for the point-to-point link between us or the point-to-multipoint link between us. You know, we will gladly assign every site a /48, et cetera, et cetera. So if your ISP isn't doing what I'm saying they should, I don't know what to tell you about how to make them do the right thing, but I'm happy to agree with you that what they're doing is the wrong thing.
All right. I just wanted to validate. So.
Yep. In the back.
Alan Beatty, Peak Internet. We're a small regional ISP in Western Oregon. And what I've been planning on doing is sort of a combination, I guess, where we start, say, the upper quartet of our /32, say the 1,000 block for our customers, and then just incrementally go through that 1,000, 1,001, 1,002. And that leaves lots of room for growing down later if we need to, but it leaves a lot of space in between the individual allocations so they can grow up if need be.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. That would be a as I said, a variant on the theme of bisection.
Right, it's just a lot simpler math.
It simplifies the math. It has the trade-off that it doesn't quite maximize the space in between each point, and you will probably run into some point in the future where you end up having to carve things up somewhat differently from that, and suddenly it blows your simplicity out of the water. But as long as it lasts, it's good while it lasts.
I figure if we run out of space in the 1,000, we could either go to 2,000 or we could go to 1,000 and, you know, move down a quartet and start splitting that up the same way.
Sure. There's lots of different options for how you do this.
All right.
All valid approaches.
Hi, I'm Brad Davis. I work for a e-commerce company based out of Denver, Colorado. And one of my questions I'm wondering is we have two data centers across the U.S. and two offices also across the U.S., all mm-hmm. four disparate sites.
Yep.
Do you recommend running ULA so that you have a common space inside, or?
I don't. I think ULA is a concept without purpose.
Okay.
And a really bad idea at that. and here's why. If you run ULA, you're also going to have to run GUA. And now you've created a source address selection problem. And yes, there are algorithms that theoretically make this easy and simple and whatnot. And yes, in theory, things don't link and get leak and get routed the wrong way and whatever. But now you've got to maintain all of your routing tables to route GUA one way and route ULA this other way. And oh, by the way, you're still going to need to make exemptions if somebody tries to get to the GUA address of something over here in this other center that doesn't send it out through the internet. So now you've complicated your routing and tripled the effort, and your access control lists are still going to be every bit as complicated. So what I recommend instead is go to your RIR, get 4 or even 16, ideally, contiguous /48s, assign each of the sites a /48 within that, and then do your security stuff that you care about and that ULA was going to help you solve just by using the /44 instead of the individual /48s in your access control lists and whatnot.
Okay. What about, with the RIR, today we have like /26s in our, in our V4 space
because you're still counting hosts,
right? Well, and we just don't need that much directly accessible on the internet stuff. So, going to an RIR today has been not possible. But well, with V6, does that make that
It's easy
reasonable?
With V6. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. If you've got four different sites and they're each multi-homed, you have no problem requesting a /48 for each site from the RIR.
Okay.
There's a multiple discrete networks policy for IPv6. I'm assuming you're in the Aaron region being in Colorado.
Right.
We can talk more about the details offline if you'd like. I'm also a member of the Aaron Advisory Council, and I actually wrote the current ISPv6 policy, and I was heavily involved in the writing of the current end user IPv6 policy. And I wrote the first end user IPv6 policy that was recently modified at Aaron. So I'm quite familiar with the policies, and you're going to have no trouble whatsoever as long as each of those sites is multi-homed, or if you can show that you've got more than, I think, 2,000 hosts at each site.
Right. And definitely don't have that.
Well, there's no distinction between public and private, and right. Anything that uses an IP address is a host.
Yeah, still not.
So all of your users' smartphones and iPads and BYOD devices count.
Yeah, we're like 100 employees.
Okay.
No chance. But
but if you're multi-homed, then that problem is solved also. And if you're not, then you're going to end up getting your space from your upstream. And your upstream should have no trouble giving you a 48 per site.
Right. And that's kind of what I was thinking they would do. I need to confirm with them. But
multi-homing is easy. So yeah. I would recommend just multi-homing.
We like to make that their problem. So
there being who?
Colos. So.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
To each their own.
Yeah, it's. I've done it for years, but it's one less thing we have to worry about because we use like two racks and not even 100 megabit worth of bandwidth, so it's not really something we want to do. But that kind of leads me to the next point: is what about We've talked about getting an ASN so we could advertise, one unique space from both data centers, but obviously we're way too small for that today. Does that change with V6?
You're talking to a guy that has an AS number at his house, and his house is multi-homed, and advertises a /48.
Okay.
So what do you mean by too small?
Okay.
As long as you're multi-homed, size doesn't matter.
Right. Okay.
It's very easy to get connections to more than one ISP, and if you care about your stuff staying up, that's wise anyway.
Right.
And if you're caring about advertising your prefix, then you're probably caring about things like that and multi-homing.
Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't matter that your only upstream is doing a static advertisement of your prefix on your behalf because there's no other path anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So at that point, you've gotten into this multi-homing thing I was talking about a minute ago.
Right.
Go get a /44 from the RIR and be happy.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
No problem. Any other questions?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.